This episode is brought to you by our amazing sponsors. Anchor Valley Wine, Barnyard Elixir, Red Robin, Happy Dragon, Mongolian Barbecue, Chris Barnett of Barnett Group, At Realty Executives, and Jail Insurance.
Celebrating the world's best dabs.
Son, this is whiskey. Try some.
Okay, thanks, Dad.
What are you doing?
Nothing, honey.
Sure, Dad may forget birthdays, graduations, even your fourth grade piano recital. But he'll never forget to tell you.
You're doing that wrong. No, I'm not, Dad. Yes, you are.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dadcast. I am JP. I am joined, of course, with my co-host, the very tenacious Nick Martin. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hey, good, man. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Today is quite possibly going to be what we hope to be the greatest podcast episode in the history of podcast episodes, because we have the honor and the pleasure of hosting a world-renowned surgeon. He's a comedian. He had to flee to America to escape well, we'll get to that story later. He has done so much. He is a humanitarian. And I think most importantly, the biggest accomplishment of this man is he's a dad. And that's what we hear from Dadcast. And that's an ongoing accomplishment. Everybody, welcome to the show, Bassem Youssef. Hello, sir. How are you?
I mean, after that introduction, I mean, your audience is kind of like down for a very big disappointment.
I don't know about
JP sets
that.
The bar so high.
Well, you should hear some of the intros we do with Nick. You know, that was actually, I was very polite to him this time. So how's it going, Bassem? How are things, man?
It's amazing. It's great. I'm loving my new life here in America. I mean, it's not new, really. I've been here for a few years now, but it's great. It's happening. I'm doing comedy. I've actually, like, in the middle of the pandemic, I was actually touring all around America. Just in the past 3 months, I was in Tampa, Houston, Dallas, Maryland, New Jersey, Miami, and I was every doing a different country, a different city. And it was interesting to see how people are dealing with the pandemic around how they are responding to comedy.
Yeah, you know, I was actually in Miami last week, the same time you were. If I had known, I would have probably showed up and introduced myself and been like, that was a little bit early. You don't know who I am yet. But I noticed.
Oh, my God. I was in the Miami Improv all weekend, man.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I was drinking, having fish tacos with my lady in Hollywood just up the street.
Yeah.
But have you noticed that in South Beach, Miami, masks don't seem to exist?
Well, I used to open my act by, this is like, guys, everywhere else in the world, this is a mask. In South Miami Beach, this is a thong. It's just like, and I kind of turned around and was like, this is how we use them here.
It's probably what they did. Oh, by the way, man, happy birthday.
Yeah, okay, man, happy birthday.
Yeah, that's my birthday too.
Yeah, Wikipedia is our friend. So,
oh my God, yes.
I've already established that you are a dad, but this is the one question we do ask of all our guests that come on the show. Are you a dad?
Yeah, I am a dad for two children.
Two children, and how old are they? If that's something you'd like to share.
The oldest is Nadia. Nadia, she just turned 9. Her birthday is 3 days apart from mine. So we kind of like celebrated our birthday together. And the youngest is Adam, and he's 3.5 years old.
Wow.
And, so that's awesome. You know, it's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
How is that? You know, see, we're actually the same age. Well, okay, you got me beat by a few months. And so 9 and 3, you got a late start in the whole world of fatherhood as well.
Yeah, everything happened to me late. I became very late. I got married, got children very late, and even I lost my virginity very late in my life. So, yes, I'm a very late bloomer.
Well, it was probably all that study you were doing to become a surgeon, right? That took all the time up?
Yeah. Yeah, being a nerd is not an easy thing.
Nick called me a nerd the other day just because I like computers and cameras and audio equipment. I told him I was a nerd in disguise. So, Bossum, you have...
I think I said you were my go-to nerd because trying to buy a computer. I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, thank... Yeah, but look how beautiful what your background looks now. You should have seen him last week, Bossum. It was a window.
It was terrible.
What was it?
It was embarrassing. It was a window with some shutters. It was the worst thing in the world.
Now you have guitars all behind you. That's amazing.
And now he's upped his Zoom background game. Looking exactly. Good.
Nice.
So let's dive into, you've written some children books. And from what I've read, one of them is based on your daughter, Nadia. Is that true?
Yeah, it is the one children's book. It's called The Magical Reality of Nadia. And now I don't know how to write the children and help you. What is important is your experience. Useful to write about for children. So I thought of channeling my own experience through the book to Nadia.
I hate to say this, but everything you just said, we didn't hear. Looks like you got a bad connection on your end. Uh-oh. See, there he is.
Yeah, what happened?
He's back. I don't know. Maybe the internet. You're in San Francisco right now?
No, I'm in Los Angeles, actually.
You're in LA. Okay. Well, there should be some gosh darn good internet there. Let's back it up. Let's repeat that about the children's book, because it was breaking up and no one heard anything.
Yeah. Okay. So if you told me a couple of years ago, you're going to write the children's book, I would have never believed you. But then I sat with Scholastic and Scholastic, you know, said like, we can help you write like that book, but it has to be coming from your own experience. So I thought like, what is the problem with the world today? The problem with the world today is like a bunch of adults that are fighting about stuff that they were never told or prepared for as children. Everything that we have to go through now as adults actually comes from the fact that we, children, we were never told how to deal with them. And the big part of it is accepting someone who is different, accepting someone who is not exactly like you. So I had that problem in Egypt when I was a comedian, being different, standing against authority, against the main current. And then I'm coming here to America to be also an immigrant in a country that is, there is a lot of people there who do not accept people who are different than them. Oh, and in that stage of middle school children, this is where children start to hear and understand and get exposed to terms like inclusion, diversity, racism, different. This is where people start to say, I am different from other people. I look different. So I thought, what would it be like for my daughter? So I kind of like did this like fictionalized story about Nadia, is a new a daughter of new immigrants in America. She's American everything, but now she's starting to feel she is different because of her culture, her color, her skin, and then suddenly she's in a position where she doesn't know what to do. And here enters Titi. Titi is an ancient Egyptian teacher who was locked in Amulet for 3,000 years. Think of him as the genie in Aladdin.
Okay.
And he was cursed by a powerful magician that in the past they had the same exact problems that we have today. Inclusion, diversity, accepting people. And then he was cursed that. And then Titi comes out and he's at this like incredible, bigger than life character. And then he starts to take Nadia into these magical journeys through comics book that transfers them to different parts of Egyptian history. And I use fables, mythology, real history to tell the story, tell stories, make Nadia get informed about her life today in America. Because everything that's happened is happening today has happened before. History does have a habit of repeating itself. Yes, so through these stories, Nadia knows more about herself, about her new environment, and she starts to teach other children about it. And kind of like, it's kind of like her history through that kind of like informs her present. So that's basically the story. Yes, there's a, like a messages of inclusion and diversity and accepting the other, but it's not really on the nose. There's still like a lot of adventure and history and magic.
That is amazing. I'd like to get my hands on one of those. And
yeah,
my 7-year-old little girl.
She'll love it.
Oh, she'll love it. Oh, that'll be her next bedtime story. Absolutely. Because it's a message and it's what the world needs more of, period.
You definitely. Know? Yeah.
You know, where we're from around here, unfortunately, and I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to call out anyone in particular, of course, but there is that mindset that exactly what you're talking about of if you're different, people let you know about it. And I come from Southern California in L.A. I grew up in L.A. with everybody. Doesn't matter who you were. So I don't feel like I have any of that in me at all. You know, if you're a human, man, you're human. And that is that's what it is. But I mean, look at the world. Turn on the news. I don't suggest you do. But if you turn on the news,
let me tell you something. Americans are a little bit too hard on themselves. Yes, there is a lot of stuff here to complain about. But racism and not accepting others because mm-hmm. they are different is a global thing. I can tell you a lot of that is happening also in the Arab world. A lot of that is happening even with the communities in America. It is not racism and hate and alienating of the other is not an American thing. It's not a white thing. It's a global thing. And you can find someone who is brown from my part of the world who could be the most racist person ever. So that's why when I know that, like, you know, in America, we kind of like we like to dunk on white people like you because you are kind of like butt of every joke. You're an easy target because if I cannot do that on other brown people. But the fact of the matter is it is a global problem. You will find people in the Arab world who are not accepting of other people different color, different religion, of different orientation, even of a different political thoughts or direction. So it is a big thing all over the world. And I think what is happening in America is a manifestation of what is happening in the world.
Over the world. Now, would you call it, it's a global thing, absolutely. I can't disagree with you on that part. But is it also a learned, taught thing from the parents? Or is it a geographical thing?
It is kind of like it's not a learned thing as much of like it's an ignorance thing. It's kind of like it is more of the ignorance of the parents is inherited.
Yes.
Because if you're learned, if you're informed, you'll not be like. And this is kind of one of the messages of the book. The book basically says that being different is cool. The strength of this country, the how big and how great this country is because it allowed people from different culture and different backgrounds to melt into this country. This is one of the greatest countries of the world because of that, because it allows that. It allows the brains and the passion and the hearts of people from all over the world to come here and to be part of this. And, you know, the people who are afraid of people who are different than them, they don't know that many people here would rather stay here than go back to their countries because they like this country. They like this land and they want to contribute to it. And this is why so people need to understand that being different is a source of strength. It's not a source of suspicion or worrisome.
Yeah, absolutely. You're a good man, Bassem. I'm glad you're on the show. Man, I didn't even prepare myself. All you guys got drinks and I didn't. I'm starting. You know, maybe I can go get one of our, we'll get one of those later. Nick, you're so quiet over there, man. What's going on?
I'm just listening. Like, this is like some good stuff here. And yeah.
Okay. But, you have any questions?
Let's lighten it up a little bit though. Let's we like to do a dad joke. So being a comedian, I'm sure you've probably got way better dad jokes than I have or JP has. So I'm going to put you on the spot. No. Let's get a dad joke out.
We're putting him on the spot, Nick.
I know.
I got a joke.
Uh-oh. We losing you again? See what you did there, Nick?
I know.
Wait, are you back? There you are. Okay. If you told us a joke, we didn't hear it.
Yeah. No, I didn't. Oh God. No, I don't have any dad jokes, guys. Come on. I mean, you're putting me on the spot.
Well, thankfully, Nick Martin, you know, the guy right there, he's got a whole book of them. And so
far, for Christmas, hooked me up with a book of dad jokes.
I should get that book.
You shouldn't. It's actually
terrible.
Let me tell you why. Okay, so what we've done on every show is we've told a single joke because it's 365 days worth of dad jokes in that book. So we're going to open up to today's date and hopefully we finally have a decent joke, but I'm not going to hold my
breath. I have a joke for you.
Okay.
What does an egg drive? Yolk wagon.
Yeah, I knew it was something along those lines. They see, that's a dad joke. There you go.
There you go.
And it's probably 100% better than what's about to happen from that book. Nick.
Oh, boy. Here we go. March 25th. Want to hear a dirty joke, JP?
Sure, Nick.
A dog jumped into a mud puddle.
That's terrible. We got to write a strongly worded letter to the authors of that book.
Or we should just write our own dad jokes. We
can collaborate with Bossum, and that can be the next book, man. Boom.
Yeah. Dad jokes with Dadcast and Bossum.
So I have to admit something. In the last 24 hours, Bossum, I have looked and watched at almost every single... I went down the Cinderella hole on YouTube videos that included you, because I am an aspiring YouTuber myself, or I was a few years ago doing my own thing. And I came across and saw some of your early, early stuff that you did, which actually was what was the catalyst for your show that you ended up doing. And I mean, 5 million views over the course of a few months. And we're talking 10 years ago. This is unheard of when it comes to YouTube back then. Just try and get some information on you. But that, how did that, what it was, I mean, it was all the whole revolution going on. It was what inspired you. I would like to hear, I know you've probably told this story 100 times, but here's 101. We'd love to hear that story and the journey that got you to America here on Dadcast.
So in a nutshell, all my life, I was a heart surgeon. I was a boring heart surgeon. Actually, not very boring. I mean, I kind of like in my heart, I hated medicine, so I need to have an outlet. So kind of like on the side, I used to teach salsa and tango. So that's kind of like my secret getaway. So the kind of like between like my, I was a Latin doctor. And then, I studied hard for the USMLE, the transfer exams, and I got accepted in an American fellowship, a clinical fellowship. And I was going to Cleveland. Then 2011 happened. And then suddenly there was a revolution, the Arab Spring. And when you watch the news, you would realize that there were two different kinds of reality. The reality on the street, people wanted democracy, change. They were revolting against dictatorship. But according to the state-run media, this was no revolution. It was a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy that was run by, the CIA, Mossad, Hezbollah, Iran, Hamas together. This is like how we go construct. I mean, I know that you guys are getting to know the term fake news. We had them for 7,000 years.
Oh.
Then we like had I had a revelation of like I was always mesmerized by Jon Stewart, The Daily Show, and I kind of like did kind of a knockoff, kind of like a version of it in an empty apartment where I did YouTube videos making fun of the state-run media. And then before I know it, kind of exploded, and I had a show. I had like offers to actually be on television, to actually get my own daily version of The Daily Show. And before I know it, I had 40 million people watching my episodes. Crazy numbers, each episode on television, the whole country was watching. But of course, you know, authoritarian figures all around the world are very thin-skinned. In your case, in America, it is orange skin, but that's a different issue. But then
not
I
anymore,
had,
it's not.
But it's going to be there.
Watch out for 2024.
Then I had like under the Islamists, got to power, and under them I was persecuted, arrested, I was interrogated, and then they left. They were kind of removed by the military. The military didn't like my show also, so I was also persecuted, had my show canceled two or three times, and then I had to escape from Egypt. So basically I left everything behind and I came to America. and I'm starting from scratch. Now, it doesn't, here in America, it doesn't matter if you have 40 million views. It doesn't matter if the whole country is watching you. At the end of the day, you are an unknown. So I had to kind of like start from the beginning, kind of build myself from the ground up and have like a fresh new start and kind of just have to be humbled down and kind of like have a kind of a reinvention of myself to start that career here. So that is my story in a very nutshell.
That's a big nutshell. And so crazy, so yeah. Interesting. I couldn't even imagine, you know, we're spoiled over here. You know, it's, I don't see many people being shut down their TV show. Oh, actually, you know what you do? Not to the extent of getting arrested and, you know, death threats. I went down that rabbit hole and watched enough videos to see that I sure as hell wouldn't want to be put in that position. That's some scary stuff, man.
No. Here's the difference between America and what happens in my part. So in my part of the world, the people who does that, the shutting or the persecution or ending your career is the government, people with power. It's more of like public outcry. If kind of like at the end of the day, you are being shut down by private entities that they are worried about their ratings, or it's business. If you're bad for business, you're out. And if the public outcry can be, you know, bad for business, it's, you know, they will shut you down. If sometimes you will have a public outcry and the company will not care about it because it's still good for business. For example, when Nike, Kaepernick, to be the face of, you know, of their campaign,
right?
His T-shirt, a lot of like Nike was burned by the people who hit Kaepernick. But Nike didn't care because it was good for business. So at the end of the day, what really decides this whole thing about cancel culture, it's not really cancel culture. It's like what's bad for business.
Yeah. Yeah, I can. Mm-hmm. Can't argue that, man. It's, yeah. Oh, that whole, heck, we could spend hours talking about Kaepernick, but we're not going to go there unless you want to talk football. Are you a fan of sports, Bossum? American sports of any kind?
NBA, man, all the way.
Who's your team?
The Warriors.
Okay. Like, you know what? I don't have any problem with that whatsoever. I'm a Laker fan, so, you know, they're kind of, but, you know, you can't.
Laker fan is my second favorite because now I live in Los Angeles. But, like, when I came to America, I came and I stayed in the East Bay. That's kind of like the
Oakland. Yeah.
Like around nice. Oakland. Yeah, and I would at that time that was the rise of the Warriors, and I was just like got mesmerized. I love Steph Curry, and I love Steph Curry, the coach, because he actually grew up in Egypt, so I had kind of soft spot for that team. And for the past 2 years, because of the injuries, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, whatever, they kind of like dwindled down, but they're still my team. I still love them. I still appreciate them, and kind of like I didn't kind of like ride on the Lakers wagon yet because LeBron James came there, although he's an amazing player and I love watching him play with the Lakers.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. There were so many, many years there where it was not so good at all. Oh, yeah. So back to your kids. As a father, in both of us, Nick as well, we are both older skewing for having the young children that we do have. My youngest is 7 years old. What's the hardest thing you do? There's always difficulties, and I hate talking negative. We're going to get to the positive, but if you were to pinpoint the frustrations that are good frustrations that you have as a father of young children, you got to have a story. Like, I bet you something happened this morning that was just is funny that little kids do. Anything that pops out of your head?
Well, are you ready for something a little bit heavy?
I was born ready. Should I strap in?
Okay. So my youngest, Adam, he got diagnosed to be on the spectrum of autism about 4 or 5 months ago.
Okay.
And for us, it was kind of, this kind of like shook us hard. But we think that we were kind of like very, we were not in a very good state. And he was kind of, has kind of a delayed speech. But we went to doctors. We kind of like, we caught it very early. And of course, it was very difficult in the pandemic, trying to find help and open schools, because like most of those services that is provided by your local authorities are kind of shut down because of COVID.
Right.
And then they say like remote learning. Well, good luck having an autistic child who's 3 years old looking to a screen, talking to a stranger. Yeah. So it was but here's what happened. We kind of like a friend of us told us a sentence that kind of like opened our mind. He said like, how many people do you hear that they are autistic? It's like a lot. It's like, how many of those you see them in adult life? It's like not many. So many of those people kind of like grow out of it. And many of them with the right intervention and the timely intervention kind of like grow up and to become amazing people. I mean, I've been reading a lot about it. Bill Gates, Dan Akron, Susan Boyle, even like they are like old people who had received that kind of diagnosis. He's not like he doesn't like, you know, get the typical autistic things like, you know, the sensory irritation and stuff, but he's kind of like, you know, he's on the spectrum. But I will tell you something. It was, of course, very hard, but it was a blessing in disguise because I am used to be someone to be always under stress, and I used to bring that stress with me home. And I think my son having this kind of diagnosis kind of moderated my stress and moderated my responses. Now I am actually much more understanding and receptive of my children. I don't lose my, I check myself before I kind of like lose my temper or right. become loud. And now I kind of like look at these children in a different eye. And I think it made me a much better father, a much better parent, to be more receptive and to be more understanding to someone who might not see eye to eye on the same things, who might not have the same perception. So it is a journey, and I'm kind of like you. I want to use that for a positive thing. I want to actually use my platform in order to talk to people about this, because things like this become a stigma, and they become and because of that stigma, society and parents don't really do something to improve it, and instead they kind of hide it, kind of like, you know, push it under the rug. And I think like the more accepting society is for people who are different, they're not handicapped and they're not backwards or anything, they're just different, they're just having their own pace in development. And I think the whole thing about child development is needs to be kind of more liberated from the very solid molds that that medical and scientific definitions put them into. Because I think they kind of like, there's like very, very like rigid molds that if you do not fit the criteria, you are behind. And I think we need to change this.
I can relate to your story big time. My brother-in-law, who is 27 years old, he is not on the spectrum. He is, for lack of a better way of saying it, full blown. He has autism. He doesn't speak. He needs 24-hour care, and one of my other jobs, you know, 40 hours a week actually, is taking care of him, a 27-year-old man. And, you know, he needs help going to the restroom, and you have to make his food, everything. And before I knew him, and I don't like to say this, but it's an admittance that, you know, I would see someone with this disability on the street, and, you know, I just, you know, turn a shoulder and not want to deal, you know. Now I welcome it because I understand it. I live it. And yeah, that's, the world would be a much better place, wouldn't it? I mean, that also hits on your book about indifference and understanding and everything that you
absolutely
wrote.
And now let's like kind of follow that up with a funny story. So a couple of months ago, I was traveling. So this time it is Nadia's story. So when the book came out, I told Nadia, what do you think of the book? So she read the book and she said, it is not very accurate. It's like, why, Nadia? It's like, well, first of all, I do not collect bubbleheads like the book. And then she started to list the stuff that she does not do in her life. It's like, Nadia, this is not an autobiography. This is a fictionalized version of you in a book. It's like, oh. Okay, so it's fiction then. It's like, yes. And then I was traveling. I was going on a long trip And my wife just got like her wisdom tooth removed, and she was like in a, like a whole lot of pain. And so, and Nadia was like in her moments, kind of like, you know, in her kind of like nagging kind of state. And I told her, Nadia, listen, I'm traveling and I want you to be my little helper. You are going to take care of mommy when I go. And I don't want you to put a lot of pressure on her because she's already stressed. So Nadia kind of like looked at me and she said, what about my pressure? What about my stress? And she said, Nadia, you're 8 years old or 9 years old. Like, what could possibly be the pressure or the kind of pressure or stress you're passing through? So she looked at me and she said, we don't know what it means to be a child in quarantine. It's like, oh, nah, you win.
Oh, right? How?
Oh, boy.
I'd like to think so, right, Nick? I'd like to think because we're living it. I've got three kids at home who've had no school for a year. Well, they just went back about a week ago, thank God.
Right.
But, you know, the last year has been, at some point of this whole homeschooling, looking at a computer thing, I've just said, shined it. I see the stress those poor things are going under and also the parents going under. But yeah, I mean, that hits nail on the head. How do you argue that point?
Yeah, no, I have a 9-month-old baby and a 16-year-old daughter that's been home for a year. And oh my gosh, the stress story. Yes, I totally get it.
He also has a boy who's in the Army, the U.S. Army.
Yeah. So, yeah, my oldest is in the Army. And, my 16-year-old daughter for the last year, Dad, I can't be home anymore. We have to go to the store. We have to go to Ross. I'm like, what could we possibly need at Ross?
I want to go out.
Yeah, exactly.
My lady actually wants to go to the DMV. It's getting that bad.
Oh, wow.
Let's go wait in line. Woohoo! That's why we really enjoyed Florida, man. It is reckless as it was. It was still nice to feel some of that what used to be. And I wonder if we're ever going to get back to that. I don't know.
I hope so.
What do you think, Bossum? Everyone on the planet gets a vaccine. Will the world be the same? Are masks going to go away?
No, it will take a couple of years to kind of like get back. You know, I'm worried. Listen, I don't want to be negative, but I'm worried about the next pandemic.
The next pandemic.
Oh, and the next pandemic will happen.
We're talking like another version of the strain of the COVID?
Yeah. Not from COVID. I mean, and I'm not, listen, if you want to talk scientifically, every single pandemic that we have seen comes from animals. And in the past 100, 200 years, our connection with animals has increased dramatically, and all because of animal farming. The source of all the pandemic, all the diseases come from animals, and kind of like increasing the contact with animals is actually a huge risk. It's not about like a guy ate a bat in China. It's going to be like, I mean, if you remember like, avian flu, birds, swine flu, pigs, mad cow disease, Ebola, even AIDS came from monkeys. Mm-hmm. You know, so the thing is, if we do not find, if we do not definitely find a way for controlling animal farming, reducing it, it will continue, and it is a health issue. It's a global warming issue. It is a pandemic issue, and it will just happen again. It will, the Spanish flu happened. It's the Spanish flu is an avian flu, and it actually started in an American camp because of a chef was actually dealing with chicken, and it happened from there. So the Asian flu, the Hong Kong flu, all over MERS. There is like a very funny billboard that said like, hey, tofu did never caused a pandemic.
Well, there you go. He's afraid of the next pandemic. Well, now I'm scared.
Yeah, me too.
I know.
So not for me, my children.
Yeah.
It's what those poor things have gone through and been forced to go through this year. I mean, I don't know if that, They're going to recover. Kids are resilient. We know this, but it's been 100 years since any child has gone through anything of the sort. And it's so different nowadays than it was back in 1918. People,
well, you got anyway. Social media, so, you got everybody sharing everything. It's just, it's crazy.
Yep.
So George Carlin's your favorite comedian. You like that segue?
Oh, yes. I love it. I love it.
He is the man. Now, hopefully, because I saw that on Wikipedia, and I'm like, you know, you can't always be sure about the Wikipedia. Have you seen my Wikipedia page? I'm a female, apparently. You know, it's...
Oh, God.
I'm good at that. Look, I make comedians laugh, Nick.
I'm going to say
a world-renowned comedian laugh.
Research ever, maybe I should. Ever again.
You like my new tattoo, Bossum? Me and my lady got matching tattoos in Florida.
Oh, my God. Jeff, listen, I have to tell you, like, your Wikipedia and research ability cracks me up.
It's good. I mean, here we could. For 19 years, he studied and worked in the field of medicine. A cardiothoracic surgeon. That's hard to say. Which just means heart surgeon, right? Yeah. When's the last time you performed any type of medical surgery?
2012.
So that's actually more recent. You were still, no?
No, I was already doing my show. But like the thing is, I didn't really transition completely to comedy because I was still not sure about my new career.
Right.
So you have to understand how embarrassing it is to be in a ward where the patients are recognizing you. It's like, oh my God, this is the funny guy from the internet. Yes, we know him. Is he going to operate on me?
Yeah, right. This is the guy cut me open. Oh,
yeah, it was hard. It was very hard. So I kind of like, when I got kind of like more confident about my entertainment career, I kind of left medicine. And because of that decision, many more patients are alive today.
Oh, wait, is it this one? Boom, there it is. I haven't used my sound effect board for you yet. Oh, man. So in my deep dive down that rabbit hole of YouTube videos and Bassem Youssef, I came across one earlier today. It was an interview with some lady, probably a morning show on NBC. By the way, well done on being on every single talk show in the history of the universe. That's
and well amazing. Done on having, I guess, the most viewed Jon Stewart episode ever.
Yeah, that's true. And how cool was that when Jon Stewart presented you the award and said he was the Bassem Youssef of America? I can only imagine.
I'll tell you even a cooler story about Jon Stewart. Now, are you ready for the cool story?
I was born ready.
Okay. So when a lot of people said, like, how did you get yourself on Jon Stewart? So I said, listen, when people started to recognize me in the international press, when I was still on YouTube, I managed to mention and drop Jon Stewart's name in every single interview deliberately.
Right.
So it's like, I watch Jon Stewart. I love Jon Stewart. I get mesmerized by Jon Stewart. And then it's like, I eat Jon Stewart 3 times a day. It's like, I'm just like dropping his name randomly. And because of that, the first ever English article that was written on me was by the Daily Beast. And the title was called The Jon Stewart of the Night. So it's like, it worked. I am on his radar now. So by the time of like, I finished my first season and I wanted to do a live show, I kind of used every single connection, like, you know, a connection of a connection, of a connection to get to a producer on his team in order to shadow his team. So I shadowed his team for 3 days. And surprisingly, when I was there, I found Jon Stewart coming up and shaking hands with me, and he heard of me. Then he invited me to his room, to his office, and then a 5 minutes meet and greet turned to an hour and a half of conversation. Oh, wow. And then I came out of that room, and his assistant said, like, would you like to be on his show? I was like, are you kidding? Of course I want to.
Yeah.
So this is how I put myself onto his show. Now, this is the fun part. I told him after the show, I will make you proud of me. This will not just going to be a meeting. I will do all my best to make you come and see what I can achieve in a year. A year later, I had like the best theater, the biggest theater. My show was like had a live audience, and it was amazing. And I invited him to the show, and he came.
Yeah.
And he was on my show. And that was kind of like the validation. I mean, like everybody could be on a Jon Stewart show, but how many people can say I got Jon Stewart on my show? And because of that, and it was so funny, when he came, he could not believe the kind of reception he received. I mean, his episode on my show is on YouTube, kind of like jumped from their seat, standing ovations for 3 minutes in Egypt. And I remember him after the show telling me, I would have never thought that a short Jewish guy from Jersey would have been received in that kind of reception in the middle of Cairo. And yeah, that's my Jon Stewart story.
Amazing, awesome. Man.
Yeah.
Amazing. You know, it's like you willed it to be, you channeled it and it happened.
All right. So I've got to know, how did you find out about us? So, again, two guys from Oregon,
his agent.
But before that, like I get a list of the stuff that I want to do. It's like, I want to do that. I want to do first of all, the name is very cool. That is a very cool name. Just like the Dadcast. Like, I want to be on that show.
That's awesome. Man,
we appreciate it. Cause we're, we're just getting started.
I was so blown away when I got the email. I'm like, no way. This is a joke.
Of course not.
I talked to your agent.
Happy to be on that show.
Yeah, no, we were so thankful and just like, wow. So, yeah.
You may be our Jon Stewart.
Okay.
I'm not even kidding you. This, you know, maybe this will, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, this podcast started out as like something just fun with me and JP. And we were talking to our local friends. And I have some friends in the music industry that I've been doing a concert promoter for about 20 years. So I've got friends in the music industry and reached out to some of them, and we've had a couple of famous people on there. Nothing like you though. And, it's going from there, and it's growing. And our goal now is to do this full time.
You guys are having a very cool show, and I love being on it.
Oh, it's awesome. We thank you. Yeah. Don't worry thank about you. Mike. He gets a little bit nervous around very good looking men. So, you know, it happens. And I'm not talking about me. This is not a good looking man.
You want to be my co-host?
You can't fire me.
You can still produce.
Bossum, do you still do your podcast? Because what I was going to say is I saw an interview like 3 years ago that you were starting the Remade in America.
Yeah, well, I did one season, but I wanted to move on and actually do something different. So right now, actually, I'm preparing for a new podcast with actually like a fellow comedian.
Ooh.
And I hope it works out. I cannot really reveal the details because we're still kind of like preparing a pilot for the buyers.
Right.
But I hope we can do it.
You ready? Comcast. Yes. I know that's a cable company, but it's also a good name. Comedy. Comcast. I don't know. No, you go ahead and take credit for it.
Nice. We have a different name. Don't worry. So,
on your previous podcast, was it a platform? Was it a certain topic you guys talked about? Or was it kind of like us where we try to talk about parenting and dad life, but it usually falls right out the rails and we start talking about, you know, basketball?
No, and it turns out dads do other things other than parents.
Yes, that's true.
There's that.
My previous podcast was called Remade in America, and it's basically about like how to reinvent yourself, especially if you are come from a place with certain expectations. You could be so I interviewed amazing people. Like, for example, I interviewed like the first Latina who was like an NPR host. I interviewed LGBTQ comedians. I interviewed like Maz Gibrani, who was like a Persian comedian. So it's kind of like everyone in his life or her life at a certain point come to a point where they want to change their perspective, their lives, their careers. And it happens that many of those people have to do it in America, whether you come from a different country, whether you are from the middle of America and you find yourself on one of the coasts. There is a kind of like a reinvention. I was very interested in these stories. And that's why I kind of like related those stories with mine.
Right.
So that's why it was a very special podcast that I really loved.
Well, good. Hey, when's your, do you have an ETA on when this new podcast is going to start happening, give or take?
It's Hollywood, baby. I mean, you pitch, you wait, you pitch, and you wait, you pitch, and you wait. Everybody in Hollywood is moving. I was like, hey, I'm working on a script, right? Well, everybody is pitching somewhere.
Maybe, I don't know, who's the biggest movie star in the world right now? Dwayne Johnson? The Rock?
Yeah.
The Rock. Well, Rock's agent's going to approach Bossom and say, hey, we'd like to be on your podcast. And then you'll have an idea of how we feel about you, man. Amazing.
Man.
Good.
That's so much. Thank you.
How much traveling have you done in the U.S.? Have you hit almost every single state so far?
No. No, but I have been into, I mean, I have been to Portland. I have to tell you guys, you know, I mean, I thought that Los Angeles is like a hippie state, a hippie city until I went to Portland. No. Portland is like in a different category, guys.
Yeah,
I mean, I could not actually believe that seriously, like in the last elections, half of the American states were still voting on weed, and Oregon said, all right, we'll allow cocaine. It's like, what?
Screw it, man. You can do the cocaine. Do all the meth you want. You're just going to get a $100 fine. It's fine.
Oh. It's crazy. It's
so crazy.
I'm living here. It's crazy. it's batty. Who knows? Only time will tell how that one's going to play out. But yeah, we are in the far southern end of Oregon. Portland is way north. So we are at what I like to call the real Oregon. You can't base Oregon off of Portland, unfortunately. Although 95%.
But Portland is a great place to place your Oregon onto. That's a great happy place, man.
No, it is a cool place, but don't get me wrong. It's
different.
If you ask everyone here, if you could just kind of separate Portland and make it its own state, most people are going to agree they should make it its own state.
Wow. Internal state politics.
Oh, yeah. Dude. The state of Jefferson, they've been trying to do it for years. They want to separate Northern California and Southern Oregon and make it its own state called the state of Jefferson. But it's never going to happen. They've been trying for years and years and years. And, you know, politics. It is. Well, there you guys go drinking again. I'm so freaking jealous.
Give this man a bottle of water, guys.
Let me get my producer over here. Oh, wait, that's me. It's. Oh, no, don't worry. I'll be fine. We got a few more minutes to go and we'll be good. Are you a movie fan at all?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. I ask a little background on me real quick. I used to work in radio. I still work in radio, but that's where I got this beautiful voice. I've done radio and I've interviewed all kinds of rock stars, musicians, celebrities that come through town, et cetera, et cetera. And I always asked them a couple of questions. One was their favorite movie, two, their favorite food, and three, which is I hope to be an uncommon question for you. What is the one thing that Bossom Youssef cannot leave the house without every morning?
All right. Favorite movie, Shawshank Redemption.
The Shawshank Redemption. Good stuff.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But my favorite food, it used to be a whole lot of things, but now I'm vegan.
Correct. So carrots.
But I would say stuffed grape leaves.
Stuffed grape?
You know, like grape leaves, like stuffed with rice.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know the dolma, like, you know, it's like the Lebanese thing, yeah.
Yes.
Or lentil soup, a very good lentil soup. So that is me. And the thing that I cannot leave home without, I'm sorry to say, my phone. Absolutely, man.
100%. You an Apple man or an Android man?
Oh.
I bet you he's an Apple man.
Apple.
Yes, sir. All right. I just made the switch.
Apple, baby.
I can't believe you waited so long, JP.
I'm sorry, man. I'm a creature of habit and I don't like, he's trying to get me to buy a brand new iMac for our podcast. And I went over to his house and I saw it and it's so pretty and
it's amazing,
but I sat down in front of it and I felt like a 5-year-old who's never seen a computer before. I could not operate the thing even. And I watched a YouTube video and now I'm a pro. So, you know, it's okay. Gosh, the YouTube, isn't it great?
Yes, I'm a Mac man all the way. I mean, I was a PC all my life, and then I had some money, so I started to be a Mac guy.
Oh, see, it's all about the money. Money changes people.
Absolutely.
Nick, I'm putting you on the spot, man.
What's up?
I'm not going to say a word for 3 minutes. Go.
Whoa, let's not do that. I told you, you're leading this one, buddy. Actually, I do have a question. So you've been out touring. What is your favorite comedy club to play at?
Oh, favorite comedy club. Well, it is different. I would do not have a favorite comedy club, but there is a comedy club that I found extremely interesting. It is, you can say it's in the middle of nowhere, but it was very interesting to me. It is called The Funny Stop, and it is in Cuyahoga Falls in Ohio. And it is, according to his owner, Pete, it's a blue-collar comedy club. This is what the comedy club started in the 70s and the 80s. This is how they started. It's not fancy at all. Very down to earth. Very cheap drinks and food. Normal local people coming along. And I have to say, it was one of the most interesting experiences that I have been through. And it was interesting because right the next week, I was in Miami Improv, which is the most luxurious comedy club I've ever seen in my life. Oh, I mean, wow. The green room is just like crazy, you know? Uh-huh. So it's kind of like you find yourself in different moods and different vibes. So, but yeah, the one in Cuyahoga Falls is very interesting.
Because now, if you're ever in Ohio, I'm going to have to check it out. That's
yeah, Ohio, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. I almost went 3 minutes. I say I'm not going to talk, but then I just
go for it, dude.
I can't help it. At least I'm not talking over everyone this time, Nick. Your comedy routine, Bossum, is it? Do you switch it up between shows every other day, or does it stay kind of the same, or is it depending on the crowd, or you know, how is that process for you?
Well, I have a goal. The goal is to get that one-man show comedy routine to be sold to Netflix. So that is why it is fairly consistent. However, of course, there is always a space for improvisation depending on the crowd, how they're behaving, you know, kind of like playing with the crowd. But it is not your typical stand-up comedy where you do crowd work, where you ask people, you get engaged. It's because my comedy routine is basically my story. So think of it as a two-act play. The first act is me in Egypt, a doctor having a revolution and everything that goes around that. And then I was interrogated for my jokes and all of that crazy things. Like, it's kind of like scenes. Everything that I say on the joke, on my comedy routine, is actually happened to me. It's actually my own personal story. And then the second act is like me arriving to America in the most peculiar political era ever. And I describe that. So all of that is actually, it's like very personal stories that I do tell to the people. So it's more kind of like very theatrical, very kind of like one-man show more than a stand-up comedy, but it is in the form of stand-up comedy. So it's still funny and it's still engaging and everything, but it is more of like a much deeper story of what I have been through. That's why I tell them, this is not your typical stand-up comedy show. Everything that I'm going to tell you tonight actually happened to me, every single thing. And it's true. So, and I think people get engaged to do it. They engage with the show because it is true. People can relate to it.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? I watch a whole lot of Netflix, so I've got some pull. I'll see what I can do about that for you.
Oh, please do.
Between me and my lady, I think we might be the number one subscribers to Netflix, which is why there's this overweight problem, which you can't see on the camera. But,
I would love, Jeff, that you can come to one of my shows. It would really be an honor that you and Nick can come to my shows.
Oh, we would love to. Are you still touring? In fact, talk to me. What are the next 2 months? So you got any stops?
Well, Miami was the last of them for now. So we're waiting for new dates. So
of course, I was just there. Oh, man, I was literally sitting in the Hollywood International Airport having the last drink at the Margaritaville in the airport and scrolling through my phone. I was doing a little show prep for you. And I'm like, he's 20 minutes away, honey, right now. And he played last freaking night because we left on Saturday. You played Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Oh,
If I would have just looked at my phone earlier, I did my best attempt because I was on vacation to not scroll through my phone and think about work or any. This isn't work for the
that. Record. And I was
this
texting you like throughout the day on your
vacation. And this guy. Yeah, I tell him, don't call me. Calls me like 37 times. But yeah, I was pretty bummed. If I would have known, we would have shown up into that show. That would have been
awesome. Fun.
In Miami, of all places.
Yeah.
Well, if you can get booked in Vegas, we're going to be in Vegas next month. So.
Tell you, Jeff. I will get you contact, and I will actually like tell you where I'm going to be where.
Absolutely. Okay. We'd love to come out and see you, man. Bring the family. I'm not going to bring my kids, though. The 7-year-old's not going to. You want to hear? I've got a drop. This is for you. You ready? This is my 7-year-old Avery Bossom.
Hi, this is Avery. Thanks for listening to my dad on Dadcast.
How is this not the number one podcast in the world?
We're working on it.
It's not yet, but it will be. Well, we got this guy named Joe that we need to have a chat with.
I mean, Joe Rogan does not have what you have.
No, but no, he doesn't. You know what? You're damn right. He does not.
That's right.
Oh, that's amazing, man. I thank you for that endorsement. That you have no idea. That means the world to us, and we appreciate it, man. Awesome. You know what, Nick, I'm about to end this thing. So if you want to jump in here with anything,
I just want to say thank you for doing this, man. This is like, this makes this like something that we know we're doing the right thing and we know we're in the right direction. And
well, thank you so much. And I want to tell you, like, you know, sometimes I joke about like, when Arabs get their kids to comedy clubs, because like sometimes I have Arab audience coming to my show. They have never set foot in a comedy club before. So sometimes they get the kids and they say, like, the Arabs that come to my show with kids, I tell them, guys, like, you know, there's a lot of F-bombs. It's like, F-bombs.
Right.
Back home, we've got real bombs.
And you hope your show doesn't bomb. Again,
speaking of F-bombs,
you too.
I'm actually proud of us. We didn't drop one F-bomb this episode.
We didn't. And there wasn't even.
I'm proud and disappointed at the same time.
Nick, it usually takes him 45 seconds to a minute. Sometimes when he's really behaved, we get about 5-10 minutes through.
Exactly.
And then at the end of a show, I'll drop one just for the sake of the fact that I can. This isn't radio, but we're not going to do an F-bomb on this show. We've done so well.
There's this is like a dad joke, so I was very, very careful.
Dad, for the record, it would have been perfectly okay because dad doesn't drop an F-bomb here and there.
That's right.
Oh, all the time.
All right, man. Well, man, from the bottom of my heart, from my family, Bossom Youssef, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join these two guys from Oregon's podcast, Dadcast. It's been a pleasure.
It's one of the sweetest experiences that I had. Jeff and Nick, you were amazing, and I really enjoyed every minute of it. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome, man. And once this is over, we'll be in contact with you. I'd love to get that information, and we'll come see a show.
And get that book, Magic and Reality, for Nadia. Seriously, your kids will love it.
One more time. Where is there? Do you have a website or anything that anyone watching or listening to this podcast?
Yeah, my website. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you should follow my website for my upcoming shows, if I have any. So, Bassem Youssef. It is bassemyusef.xyz. It's not .com. It's .xyz because I'm cool like that.
Yeah, we're cool like that too. I got a .co for our website.
Ooh, yeah, a CO.
I have no idea what that means.
You're coming in with a CO, man.
.com.
It's kind of like we're just like too lazy to continue to a com. We're just like a co.
Yeah, they're like .co. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, we're the baby needs us. We're good.
There it is. Bossom Youssef, surgeon, world famous comedian, the man, the myth, the legend, and now reaching the pinnacle of his career by appearing on Dadcast. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, man.
I love you guys. I hope to meet you one day, even if it was in Portland.
Oh, if we have to go to Portland to hang out, you know, we'll do it. We'll make it happen, man. Bossom Youssef, thank you so much. We will hopefully have you on again in the future, if that wouldn't be a bad thing, once we have 10 billion followers and we're ruling the world.
Absolutely, 100%.
We'll see you all next week. This episode has been brought to you by our amazing sponsors, Anchor Valley Wine, Boneyard Elixir, Red Robin, America's Gourmet Burgers and Spirits. Happy Dragon, Mongolian Barbecue. Chris Barnett of Barnett Group at Realty Executives. And JL Insurance.